episode 484 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and I'm going to be continuing with the chronology. I'm going to be talking about Exo Manowar number 5 from the creative team of writer Robert Venditti. We've got Lee Garbett on pencils. We've got inks by Stefano Guidiano, colors by Moose Bauman, and letters by Dave Lamphere. So this is actually one of my favorite early issues of Exo Manowar because it features the debut of Ninjak in the current Valiant universe. Obviously, he was a character in the previous iteration of Valiant in the 90s, but this is the first time he makes an appearance in the new Valiant, and it's kind of interesting. He's a little different. We've seen a lot of growth from the character, actually, over the years with this new iteration of Valiant, and I didn't realize just kind of how much he'd been fleshed out and changed until I went back and read this first appearance. And there's some things in here that kind of had me, I guess, taking pause, right? Like being like, oh, I forgot that it was that way when he first appeared. So I'll be talking about that in more detail after I go over the issue. So just to give everybody kind of a reminder of what the chronology is, I'm going through the early books in the Valiant universe in order of not necessarily publishing order, but kind of in a reading order, keeping everything so that it makes sense chronologically. And if you are new to the Valiant universe, this iteration, you haven't been reading it right from the beginning, now's the perfect time to go back and pick up some of these early issues, pick them up in trade, and you can kind of follow along. Maybe there's some insights I'm going to give with the fact that I've read everything up to this point in the Valiant universe. I may point out little things that you may have missed, or it may help make the current stories make more sense. So let me go ahead and break down issue 5 to get everyone caught up on this particular storyline, what's been going on. So we met Arik of Dacia in issue 1. He was back in 4002 AD, a member of the Visigoths, nomadic tribe. They were at war with the Roman Empire, and they had lost a battle in the first issue, and Arik led a group of Visigoths to go and try to rescue women and children of the Visigoths who had been basically kidnapped during the battle with the Romans. When all the men were off fighting in the battle, there was a contingent of the Romans that went and took the women and children captive, including Arik's wife. So Arik leads a patrol to go and try to rescue them, and they actually come across some aliens known as the Vine, and not realizing that they're not Romans and that these aliens have advanced technology, Arik and his band attack them. They were captured. They were taken to a Vine colony ship in deep space and made to work as slaves there for years. Eventually, Arik is able to steal a suit of armor, which is called Shanhara, which is a revered relic for the Vine. They've been trying to get one of their soldiers to bond with it for years. And Shanhara, which is ascension armor, has always rejected any kind of bonding with a Vine soldier. So Arik is able to bond with this armor, and it's an incredible weapon. And with it, he's able to disable the Vine ship and escape. When he gets back to Earth, he's discovered that 1,600 years have passed. The Roman Empire obviously is no more. Everyone he knew, everyone he loved is gone. He's attacked by the Italian Air Force and some Italian paramilitary soldiers because he just basically showed up on radar and landed in the middle of the Roman Colosseum. So after the fight, when the armor basically downloads the knowledge into Arik's brain that 1,600 years have passed, he kind of flies off. And he's shocked. He doesn't want to believe that 1,600 years have really passed. We also saw that not only did the Vine kidnap some humans when they first, or what we know is the first time that they came to Earth in 402 AD, they also left behind what they call plantlings. And these Vine have been living in secret among humans for centuries, basically. And They were informed, these agents on Earth who have managed to get themselves into roles of influence and power, they were informed through almost a telepathy kind of communication that Arik was back on Earth with the sacred armor of Shannara, and one of them volunteered to basically head up the contingent of retrieval unit to go and try to retrieve the armor from Arik, because the Vine colony ship is repairing itself and will soon be on its way to Earth. So we get some more information about the Vine and their plans to retrieve the armor in this issue as well. So as we turn to the first page, we see Arik land on that same battlefield that he fought in all those years ago. And he uses the armor to basically look underneath the soil. He spots a broken Visigoth sword, as well as what looks to be a Visigoth skeleton. And as he's sitting there in the field, akimbo with his broken sword in his hand, a young Italian girl comes up and asks where he found that. He tells her that there are countless Visigoth swords buried there. He led his warriors to battle in those very fields. And the girl wonders how he would know that, because she's never seen him around before. She would definitely remember his weird clothes. And Arik mentions that, yeah, he led warriors into battle and they were slaughtered long ago. And the girl's response is, "You mean there's dead people under the grass?" And Arik said, there's too many, but I have a question for you. I've been shown something, but I don't understand how it can be true." And he asks what year it is. And the girl says, "Oh, that's simple. It's 2012. And then the girl's mother runs up, obviously doesn't want him talking to a stranger. And Arik's remark is, "Everything he's ever known is gone. His people, his family, his wife, they're all gone." So as the mother pulls the little girl Maria away from Arik, we see the Italian military show up asking Arik to surrender. But he takes off saying, "I have no fight with you," and he flies off. He goes to Peru at the headwaters of the Amazon soon after, and he takes the armor off as he looks at his reflection in the visor of the armor. He doesn't like what he sees. He obviously is distraught over the fact that his people are all gone, his wife and everyone he knows. So he sheds the armor, as I said, and he takes advantage of the water and the broken blade that he brought with him from Italy to shave. And as he does that, he's thinking back to the last time he shaved, when his wife did it for him. Clearly, they had a very close relationship, and he's missing her now that he discovers that she's no longer alive. So 36 hours later, in the same spot in the Peruvian rainforest, we see a helicopter show up. It's loaded with what looks to be special ops soldiers, commandos, and as the helicopter approaches its destination, we see Dorian, the Vine plantling, Alexander Dorian, the Vine plantling that we met last issue, tells the other soldiers to wake him when they're 2 minutes out. He closes his eyes and he's once again in that telepathic communication with the rest of the Vine, and the council is there. And they're informing Dorian what they want. They're saying, "We expect you to have the armor of Shannara in your possession before we get there, because the colony ship is making repairs and the invasion fleet arrives on Earth soon, and they don't want Shannara attacking the invasion fleet. Shannara is to be returned to its rightful people, and all of humanity, all of Earth, is to be wiped out as penance for their sacrilege," which I find to be completely ridiculous, because there's not a soul on Earth at this point other than Arik that knows anything about Shannara or the fact that it belonged to the Vine, right? Like it's idiotic, and it shows kind of the illogical thinking of the Vine. Like, I never liked them as antagonists. I think that they are honestly ignorant. And very, I don't want to say racist, maybe speciest. Like, they're not an open-minded race at all. They have their beliefs, they have what they think, and anybody else who thinks differently is wrong. And it's, yeah, I they're just morons in my opinion. It makes no sense to stamp out this race that, I mean, even from their perspective, right? Like, they have people in positions of power in the human race. Why would you want to give up that influence? Like, clearly you thought this planet was important enough to leave spies on it for all these years. And you've, from what we know, haven't done anything to take advantage of those spies and those plantlings that are in positions of influence. And now you're just going to wipe out the race because Arik stole the armor. Well, you know, maybe if you hadn't kidnapped Arik in the first place, he wouldn't have been in a position to steal the armor. So again, I just think it's completely idiotic. I think the Vine, I don't know, you know, I don't want to disparage Robert Venditti, but I don't know. I don't even necessarily think of them as good villains, but maybe Venditti did such a good job with them and fleshing them out and having them be the way they are that the stupidity is kind of built in. I don't know. It's pretty ridiculous. So anyway, the council also informs the plantlings that they will be set to begin their new life on Loam, which apparently is the Vine homeworld. And most of the plantlings seem very pleased about this. They're a paradise of our race's origin. We dare to hope for such a gift. The council has truly blessed us. Whereas Alexander Dorian seems less enthralled by that idea. He's just the look on his face and he's like, Loam? And then the council informs him, but be warned, failure will bring punishment far worse than any your adopted culture could devise. The Vine's way of life, the very future of our race hangs in the balance. Again, why would that be so? You easily could just let it go. Like, Arik stole the armor, he escaped. Your race hasn't been able to do anything with the armor for all the centuries you've had it. Why not just let it go? Just let it go. It is effectively going to make no difference to you, right? If Arik chooses to leave and take the armor with him, you're not really losing anything because you haven't been able to take advantage of the armor anyway. And if you don't go and poke the bear and attack Arik, maybe he'll just leave you alone and you can just continue with your way of life, right? How is it that the future of your race hangs in the balance? The future of your race hangs in the balance if you go and attack Arik and it pisses him off and you're not able to defeat the armor, and then he decides to destroy your whole race. But you really could leave well enough alone. Again, it just goes to the arrogance and the ignorance of this race. So we see the scene shift back to the helicopter, and the soldiers are trying to wake up Dorian. He's not really sleeping, as we know. He's obviously in communication with the Vine Council. So as he wakes up, one of the soldiers tells him, we're at the drop zone. You fall asleep again. We'll leave you where you lay. And Dorian says, I'm ready. I can hold my own, I assure you. The soldiers aren't convinced, right? Because Dorian is an executive. He's not really a soldier. And for all they know, he's not really trained. So they tell him, well, see, this isn't a team building hike on one of your corporate retreats. So let us stay out of our way. Let us do what we're hired to do. That's your best chance of making it out of the jungle alive. So they descend from the chopper and they're running off for cover when the helicopter explodes behind them. And we see it's because Arik somehow knew they were coming. He's donned the armor once again and blew up the chopper. He begins firing at the soldiers and they're all yelling to get to cover, asking what the hell that thing is. And the leader of the team is already calling for air support, tell them to bring everything they've got. So as the person in charge of the radio is trying to call for air support, he realizes the signal's jammed. All he's getting is static. And then we have a great scene from artist Lee Garbett where Arik, as this radio man, is trying to signal for help. Arik basically falls from the sky and just smashes him. Just the sound effect on the page is splotch. So he literally, I mean, this guy's just pulp. He just fell on top of him, landed on top of him with the armor. Arik then punches another guy who flies through the air and literally breaks in half. When he hits an above branch of a tree, another soldier tries to throw a grenade at Arik, who picks it up and literally stuffs it inside another soldier's torso, who then explodes. Dorian's kind of thrown back in that explosion, and his head hits the trunk of a tree, and he's rendered unconscious. The leader of the soldiers says, enough, and pulls out a knife. Like, what's a knife going to do against this armor that you've just seen tear through your fellow soldiers in a matter of seconds. Like, that makes like literally no sense at all, right? But he does charge with the knife. Arik easily grabs his wrist with one hand, and the soldiers struggling to continue to push the knife toward Arik, and Arik fires off his wrist blaster and basically disintegrates the guy's head. So all the soldiers are dead with the exception of Alexander Dorian, and they were no match for Arik or the armor at all. So meanwhile, somehow the other vine plantlings were able to record this encounter. I don't know if it's satellite feeds or some other way the vine had of recording this session, but they're speaking inside an office. One asks the other if the strike team ever stood a chance, and the response is probably not. You know, we're trying to match brute force for brute force, and that was always a fool's errand. What we require is stealth. The first vine laments that they lost poor Alexander, one of their own, and they're wondering who they should send. And the second vine actually says, "I see only one option. We bring in the specialist." And the first vine doesn't agree. So it's out of the question. The armor's in the hands of a relic 1,600 years removed from his own time. In his mind, the most advanced weapon on the planet's still the Onager. But this human you speak of understands weaponry better than anyone. And if he got control of the armor, he could wreak havoc. But the second vine says, you know, he's a professional. He does what he's paid to do, no more, no less. And the last time we used him, he did a great job. So they're in agreement to go ahead and give the specialist, whoever that might be, a call. But the first vine does tell the second, rest assured, if this fails, it will not be me explaining himself to the council. So the second vine calls up the specialist, and we do find out that it is indeed Ninjak. And the second vine apparently is someone who is very high up, if not in charge, of the British Majesty's Secret Intelligence Service. And they're in need of Ninjak's talent. So again, showing just how high up the plantlings have infiltrated kind of the upper echelons of power of the planet Earth. So Ninjak informs him that he's just tying the bow on a prior engagement and he can meet this evening. He's in what looks to be a bank. There's a vault door behind him, many dead bodies on the floor, and there's literally a body skewered to a wall with Ninjak's katana. And as he turns to stride toward the vault, he pulls his sword out and that body slumps to the floor. He uses what looks to be some kind of a smart device, maybe a smartphone, to unlock the vault. In the vault, there's a man kneeling with a briefcase telling Ninjak, "I didn't realize Marco would send you. I never should have taken it. It's just Marco has no idea of its value here. I'm sorry. Tell him it won't happen again." And Ninjak says, "My employer was very specific. Retrieving the briefcase was only half the job." And then we see him literally cut the head off this man and take the briefcase. So later at the London docks, 8 hours have passed. We see that same vine giving Ninjak his assignment, telling Ninjak rather that they don't know where the armor came from. They don't know who is wielding the armor. They only know that he was vastly superior to the Italian Air Force, and they don't want the armor to be used again. They would like the man wielding it to be brought in alive because they very much would like to have a chat with him. And £2 million have been wired to Ninjak's account, and $2 million more will follow once he's succeeded in his mission. They've tracked the suit to the Peruvian rainforest, and they also sent a full assault team, and they were wiped out very quickly. Then the vine, and again, Ninjak has no way of knowing this is a vine operative, but the vine operative asks Ninjak, "How do you intend to combat the weapon?" And Ninjak's response is, "I intend to do no such thing." And then he makes a crack about Your Majesty's Secret Intelligence Service. He's like, you know, the fact that this service has intelligence is the best kept secret in the Isles. And he's yet to meet a man who will attest to that service having intelligence. And the vine is kind of annoyed by that, turns around and in his native language says, "Arrogant human, I half hope Shanhara takes your life." So 2 days later, We see Alexander Dorian is still alive. He survived the encounter. He's got a hood on, and he's calling out, "Hello, can anyone hear me? Who's there?" And Arik pulls off the hood. He once again has no armor on, but we do see Shanhara floating there close by. We also notice that Arik has taken a pair of pants and boots from one of the other soldiers that he killed, rather than wearing the previous tatters of slave garments that he had on when he escaped the Vine colony ship. So Arik wants to know who this man is. He says, "I came here to be left alone. You should have left me that way. Why did you attack me?" And Dorian says, the mercenaries were sent to capture you, but I came to talk about Shanhara." And Arik is immediately suspicious. He says, "How do you know that name?" And then Alexander Dorian speaks in the Vine native language and says, "I have known about Shanhara far longer than you." And Arik backhands him, saying, "You click and chirp in the creature's tongue. Explain yourself." And Dorian informs him that the alien race he escaped from was known as the Vine, and they've lived in secret on this planet since the 5th century, which is the same time that Arik was taken. He tells Arik, "Yeah, they didn't just take humans. They left Vine offspring behind, and I speak the language because I'm one of them." And Arik says, "I spent far too many years enslaved on that ship, and you don't look anything like them. You've got too much hair and not enough eyes." And Dorian says, don't rely on your eyes. Let the armor show you the truth. Trust Shanhara." And Arik says, "I don't need the eyes of the armor to get the truth from you. I only need this hilt and your screams. Convince me what you say is true. Then the torture will really begin." Dorian tries to tell him that's not necessary, as Arik uses the hilt of the sword to begin cutting Dorian, and Dorian screaming. And again, Arik asks, "Who are you? How did you learn the creature's tongue?" And Dorian tries to tell him, "I already told you," when we see a ninja star go flying past Arik's head, and it literally cuts off the tip top of his ear and embeds in the tree above Dorian's head. Arik turns around asking, "Who's there? Is it another warrior coming to test his mettle?" Two more stars go flying through the air and hit Arik in the chest. Arik yells, "Show yourself, coward," as he pulls the stars out of his chest. Ninjak appears behind him, holding his sword to Arik's head, saying, "Coward, you're the one torturing a bound man." Arik's not impressed with the katana that Ninjak is wielding and says, "I've seen women trim their hair with larger blades. I'm Arik of Dasia. I cut my teeth on swords." Ninjak doesn't want to hear it. He's saying, "Yeah, too bad they didn't cut your tongue. Your rusty antique, there's nothing to brag about." And Arik says, "I'll show you much more," and begins to don the armor. But as he does, he loses consciousness and falls to the ground. And Ninjak says, "Drowsy? That would be the tranquilizer fogging your brain. See, the thing about me, when I fight someone, they don't realize it until it's already over." Then Ninjak calls in and says, "I've secured the items. Expect delivery within a day." And we get the "to be continued" message at the bottom of the page. So I love this. I love the fact that Ninjak was able to sneak up on Arik and drug him. I mean, clearly this is exactly what he was meaning when he told the Vine operative / MI6 executive that he had no intention of fighting the weapon. You know, I'm sure he did his homework. I'm sure he studied the pictures and the footage of Arik in the armor fighting the Italians. And Ninjak probably knew he wouldn't be a match for the armor. So why not bide your time? Wait until Arik is not in the armor, catch him off guard, and drug him before he can ever put the armor on. It's smart. It's intelligent. It's, you know, Jesse, whenever he's on the podcast, we're talking about Ninjak, always talks about the fact he's a cross between like Batman and James Bond. This is exactly what Batman would do, right? It's all about the planning. It's all about being prepared and taking advantage of whatever weakness your enemies are going to give you, right? Take advantage of whatever chink in their armor or any kind of weakness in their battle plan. One thing I do wonder about, though, and maybe it has to do with sound or the way the different enemies of Arik approached. Arik may not have been in the armor when the helicopter that was transporting the strike team and and Alexander Dorian to the headwaters of the Amazon where Arik was hiding. But Arik still sensed that they were coming. But, and I'm assuming, like, again, like maybe he had the armor on and the armor told him, but let's assume that he didn't. The armor still must have been able to hear that helicopter or sense that helicopter's approach and warn Arik, because he clearly was prepared for those commandos when they showed up. He clearly is not prepared for Ninjak. So I'm going to assume that, again, Ninjak, you know, it's all about stealth, as the two Vine that sent Ninjak in were talking about. You know, it's not brute force, it's stealth. So perhaps Ninjak was dropped off, you know, far, far further away outside of the armor's ability to sense that he was coming, and then snuck in very quietly. And maybe that's why it took 2 days from the time that he was given the assignment by MI6 to actually show up at Arik's position. But I love the fact that he drugged him and, you know, was able to defeat Arik before Arik could ever get the armor on. We've seen so far that Arik tends to be, you know, a bit bullheaded and a bit arrogant in his own right with, you know, his belief in his ability to be the strongest guy in a fight. It also is interesting that Ninjak does have a point about calling Ninjak a coward for sneaking up on him when Arik is torturing a bound man. I mean, that's totally true. But at the same time, I don't blame Arik for torturing Alexander Dorian after being, you know, on that slave ship for many years and being tortured himself and being forced to, you know, work the garden and barely being given enough food to survive and having his hand chopped off. I mean, you really can't blame Arik for this at all whatsoever. So as far as Ninjak goes, you know, I spoke at the top of the episode about the kind of the change in him. He seems very callous here to me, right? He kills without compunction. Clearly he killed all these other guards or whoever they are in the bank vault, and then killed the man holding the briefcase as well. And I mean, he doesn't bat an eye. You know, he's a mercenary and he's taking money to kill people, basically. That's an assassin, right? A sword for hire. It does seem like he has progressed as a character to the point where he has a little more of a conscience now. And perhaps that has to do with the Matt Kent run and the things that Ninjak, Colin King, learned about his, you know, his own childhood and such. But he does seem to have a little more compassion than he does when he first appears in the Valiant universe. So that's interesting to me as well, because after Bloodshot, Ninjak's probably my favorite character. And I remember reading this, as I said, when I've been doing these chronologies, I think this issue had just come out. And it was when I realized, oh, Valiant's back. I knew the rumors that they were on their way to being back, but I hadn't realized that the books were actually out. And somehow saw issue 5 had just come out that Wednesday, went and bought 1 through 5 digitally, and then read them all in one sitting. And yeah, when I got here and I was like, oh, they're introducing Ninjak already this early in the universe, because the first go round, it was a few years before Ninjak made his appearance. So kudos and credit to Dinesh Shamdasani and Warren Simons and Robert Venditti and the rest of the crew that helped relaunch Valiant for realizing that Ninjak was one of their better suited characters, one of their more popular characters, someone they needed to bring back much earlier rather than later, as he showed up in the first go round of Valiant. So yeah, when I read this issue, this is where I was like, yeah, I'm in. New Valiant doing a great job. Love Ninjak. And I couldn't wait for the next issue. I couldn't wait for issue 6 to see what was going to happen and to get some more Ninjak screen time or page time, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, so great issue. The art by Lee Garbett. This is the first issue that wasn't by Kerry Nord. I thought the art by Lee Garbett was outstanding. You know, he's someone whose art I really enjoy. Like the current series he's working on, Skyward from Image with writer Joe Henderson, is amazing. I highly recommend it. The art on there is spectacular. The art here is great as well. Love the color work by Moose Bauman as well. It's, you know, obviously you're in a rainforest, so you're getting a lot of greens. The purple of Ninjak is done well. The shadowy meeting of Ninjak and the MI6 agent is handled very well also. So top-notch by the creative team all around. I feel like Venditti has the voice of Arik down extremely well right from the start. And I also love the fact that Venditti, who's one of my favorite writers, is the one that got to bring Ninjak back for the Valiant Universe's second go round, because as I said, he is one of my favorite characters. So one of my favorite characters being reintroduced to the the comics world by one of my favorite writers, definitely think that's really, really cool. So I want to thank everyone for joining me as always. I know some of you may have expected me to talk about the final issue of Harbinger Wars number 2, because we got that book released last Wednesday. And originally that was my plan, to speak about Harbinger Wars 2 number 4. Even though it doesn't quite wrap up the story, there is an aftermath issue that probably is more of a real narrative ending to the story. But unfortunately, Jesse wasn't able to join me, and I wanted to be sure to get his opinion on the title. So next time he's able to join, we'll talk about Harbinger Wars 2 number 4. And we may even wait till the aftermath comes out and talk about both of them together. We'll just have to wait and see what my availability is and what Jesse's availability is. So again, I do want to thank everyone for joining as always. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use on your smart device. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes, which always help boost the podcast up when people search for comic podcasts. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at that site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.